Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA over at FanRag Sports and College Buckets at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 podcast. Say what's up to us on social media. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. New texted voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Save that and your phone is Locked On Bulls. Say what's up to us. Text us with your reactions as you're listening to the podcast, wherever you're listening to it, whenever you're listening to it. So once again, that's 331-979-1369. So today on the show, just kind of want to wrap everything that's been going on with the Bulls in terms of what's been going on court. Wrap that up into our first segment, just kind of talk about the Bucks and the Pistons real fast. Some of the lineups that the Bulls have been using in this atrocious tank effort here as we try to slowly but surely get to the end of the season and more focused on the NBA draft. But in that second part, we want to talk about Sean Kilpatrick being signed and also CJ Fair getting a shot at the NBA with the Bulls in the last handful of games we have here. And then finally on the show, we want to talk a little bit about what we saw this weekend in terms of the NCAA tournament. We had a couple questions about prospects and what they did and how they did this weekend. So we'll give our reaction to that to you guys. But Matt, what's going on? How's the Bulls tank as it's coming to a conclusion here? Are you doing all right? Are you ready for the season to be over? Or are you just ready for NBA playoffs, or what's going on?
Jordan, I could not be more ready for this Bulls season to end. I feel like you and I have done a decent enough job of hanging in there, and you know, we are a handful of people who are watching these Bulls games on a pretty regular basis. I mean, I've maybe missed one or two games over the course of the season, but for the most part, I've watched almost every of the near 82 games that we've had thus far.
It's been tough.
It's tough. It really is. And especially this stretch after the All-Star break, when you know that this team is kind of caught in the middle of where they wanted to be. They won too many games earlier in the season and are now trying like hell to maybe move up a spot or two in the draft lottery, maybe past Brooklyn, maybe past Sacramento. We'll see if they can do that. But outside of the continually impressive and optimistic performances from Bobby Portis, who's playing very well, and some surprisingly nice moments from Campaign, which, you know, laugh if you want, but he has had some decent games in this recent stretch. It's fatigue. It's exhaustion at this point, knowing what we were going to have to face coming into this Bulls season. It's a long 82-game season, and I think I can speak for both of us when I say we're ready for it to be over. Excited about the NBA playoffs. Absolutely excited. I think things are wide open with Steph's injury in the Western Conference, and as well as Houston's been playing. There are a lot of other tough teams that are making seeds 3 through 8 out West. Toronto, Cleveland, Boston, that should all be interesting in the East. And in the meantime, we've had a hell of a tournament for March Madness. Really enjoyed it. And for those of us who are Chicago bandwagoners, I mean, come on. How awesome is it that Loyola Chicago is in the Final Four? Like, did you see that coming? Because I surely didn't, and I've loved every second of it.
Yeah, between all of that going on, it's been like, I feel like for a lot of people, Bulls basketball especially, I don't know, maybe you can go back to the Nuggets game where you still had a couple people hanging on, but now that Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn in and out of the lineup,
everybody shut down. Everybody.
It's to the point where I think a lot of Bulls fans, unless you're just a diehard Bulls fan, you've kind of tuned out, or if you just watched the highlights of games. There has been a few nice things that I have over the course of these couple of losses. The Bucks loss and the Pistons loss over the weekend. I did notice that looking through all these lineups and trying to figure out what the Bulls were doing, because I thought of two things. It's like, one, can guys develop in this sort of mishmash of tanking in the last 15 to 20 games? Obviously, there's not going to be a ton of development there. But also, too, that these guys are kind of like, I'm not so much pressuring a lot of these guys if they do get blown out on this Bulls team, because you got to think, a lot of these guys are playing for the first time in rotations together for the first time ever, and they're not used to playing with each other. A lot of guys are getting minutes that didn't normally get minutes early on in this season. We saw a lot of lineups with Nico while he was here and Bobby, and things were working then. But now you got some of these other guys like Noah Vonleh, and like you said, Cameron Payne and Cristiano Felicio and Antonio Blakeney. All these guys are getting more minutes, so it's a little bit confusing out there. But I did want to bring up, Matt, the one of the best lineups that the Bulls have been putting out there. And when I say best, it's pretty much average, but we're taking small steps here. So this,
yeah, at this point in the season, you just got to call it how it is.
So this lineup actually has been one of the best lineups that the Bulls have put out there. Mind you, that the most minutes that have been collectively put together since the All-Star break, it's only been 68 minutes, and that actually included Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen, but that wasn't the best out of, I would say, any of these four or five lineups that Fred have been throwing out there. It was David Nwaba, Cameron Payne, Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine, and Noah Vonleh. Combined, they were shooting 42% from the field, 36% overall from three. I mean, it's not great, but their offensive defensive rating were actually was the part that I was focusing on more. The rebound percentage too was one of the best out of any of these lineups. Obviously, Noah Vonleh and Bobby Portis know how to rebound. Denzel Valentine's been sneaky good this year as well. Same with David Nwaba. But in terms of, if you're looking for a defensive minded Bulls team in this tank, I would say this has been your best lineup so far, even though we've only gotten 8 games and only about roughly 50 minutes of play to see that. But if you're looking for any excitement, when you see a lineup of David Nwaba, Cameron Payne, Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine, and Noah Vonleh on the floor, that's probably going to be your best chance to tune in. I don't know, have you seen anything else from anybody else on this team during these blowouts or during these games where the Bulls have been gone on this 5-game losing streak, Matt, that have surprised you a little bit? Or are you just kind of, is it just kind of like, all right?
Well, I mean, I mentioned it just a minute ago, and you have to give him a little bit of credit, and it's campaign. You know, Bobby is still playing well. Some of these interesting, weird end-of-season tankathon lineups that you're talking about that Fred's putting out there because of injuries, quote-unquote injuries, we're not really sure how severe any of them are, to guys like LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen and even some of the others. Basically, just because Fred doesn't have a choice, we're seeing some of these crazy five-man lineups. And, yeah, the Bulls are doing what they need to do, which is try their best to lose out to see if they can move up a little bit. But in the meantime, if you can see some of that player development, that's great. And what you brought up as far as, you know, can you see player development when you're tanking with these really, you know, thrown together mishmash lineups that haven't had a lot of experience and time to play together yet this season? And I know that there's been a larger conversation about that across the NBA and across the league with all of the tanking teams that there are. And I feel like the common perception is that no, you can't. But look, obviously it's not like the Bulls have what they need to make any of these young players grow exponentially in the final, whatever, 15, 20 games that they've had this season, but you still can look for positive signs. So in that sense, I think it's not entirely impossible to see little bits and pieces of player development in this kind of situation where the Bulls find themselves. And campaign is an example, because this is a guy we all laughed at. We laughed when the Bulls made that trade. We got mad when the Bulls made that trade. Everybody thought that this guy couldn't play. He kept breaking bones in his foot. He couldn't stay healthy. The few times he got a chance on the court last season, he did not fit in. Didn't look like he was in shape, didn't look like he could do anything useful. And now in this stretch of actually getting significant minutes, playing somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes a night, we've seen Campaign do some things. Some games he's shooting the ball confidently from downtown. You've seen him, you know, show his ability at times to be a decent ball distributor and a guy to push the pace in Fred Hoiberg's offense, whether because of injuries he's been in the starting rotation or coming off the bench. We have seen a non-zero level of usefulness from Campaign in these last 5 to 10 games. And you can laugh if you want, but that is something. And as the Bulls are moving forward, realize that they did pick up his option for next year. Campaign's probably going to be around next year, and now I have at least a shred of hope that he can be a useful bench player.
I think this has given Campaign just what he's done over these last eight, ten games, however long he's been getting minutes. This stretch, I think, has given him that opportunity, that invite to be a part of the team next year. Obviously, they picked up his contract and his option for next year, but this, you know what I mean, like in terms of actually being, you know, sort of extended to next year and seeing what he can come off of an offseason, developing some chemistry with some of these guys. This has at least gotten him to that point where I think he's going to get invited. It's more so going to be interesting to see what they do with Jerian Grant. While Jerian Grant has kind of followed suit with Cameron Payne in terms of what the level of play has been, I know we've talked about it, and Jerian Grant sometimes looks lost out on there on the floor and he doesn't know how to run an offense, but he did have 10 assists against the Pistons to go up against Cameron Payne's 4-for-10 night. Jerian Grant, same thing. He went 4-for-10 against the Pistons. I think the only concern I had to just talk about it real quick was Bobby Portis's defense against Anthony Tolliver on Friday night against the Pistons. Man, he was leaving him open all night. And I don't know if that was Portis just didn't believe that Anthony Tolliver could knock down the three, but he hit a career high 6 3-pointers in this game. He ended up with, I think, upwards of 30 points. And the defense was just, I don't know if it's Bobby just didn't consider his shot that great and was like, all right, he's just having a career night, or if it's a concern that he can't guard the perimeter. And that's one of those things that I thought maybe he can develop this summer, is having somebody that can stretch the floor defensively and guard all five positions. And I thought, for the most part, Bobby looked lost in his first or second season, but really sort of developed something defensively. And maybe it's just me and he got caught on an off night. But yeah, if he's trying to defend anybody smaller than maybe like a bigger sized big, a guy that can stretch it out, like a maybe like even a Nico Mirotic who can shoot the three at a clip of 35-40%, if Bobby can't guard that on nights, that's going to be tough to watch.
Yeah, it will be. And that's why it's, I mean, if you talk about things that are giving Bulls fans reasons to be excited as we move forward to finish out this ugly season, the thing that I am very curious about is whether or not the Bulls end up taking a big in this upcoming draft, particularly with that first of their two picks, their own pick, because that might have a lot to do with how this team decides to use both Markkanen and Portis moving forward. And also, will they decide to keep Noah Vonleh around? But obviously, we're not expecting the Bulls to do anything drastic as far as moving up. And unless they get lucky, they're probably not going to get Bagley or Bamba or Ayton or Jaren Jackson Jr. at this point. I'm pretty sure all four of them will be gone by the time the Bulls are picking somewhere 6 through 9. Maybe Wendell Carter is where they go. The other guy that's been paired with in the Duke front court with Marvin Bagley. And if they add a guy like that, or even if they add a guy like, say, Michael Porter Jr. slides down somehow and he falls in the Bulls' lap, what does that do as far as where the Bulls decide to use Bobby Portis moving forward? Because you're right, we have seen some things from him recently on the defensive end to say maybe there's more hope for what Bobby can be and how versatile Bobby can be on the defensive end as he is still developing his tools as a young NBA player. But it's all about where those puzzle pieces fit next season, depending on who it is that they add in this upcoming draft.
All right, so I want to get to some other stuff here. But real quick, Matt, after the tournament went on, I don't know if you caught 60 Minutes. I think a lot of our listeners out there probably tuned into part of 60 Minutes. probably for the former than rather than the later part of the show, but I hope people did.
Stormy Daniels.
I hope people stayed around for the second part of that.
The Greek Freak segment was
way
better.
Oh, man, the Greek Freak segment. I mean, if people don't know about this guy, let me just, like, fanfare for a second here over a guy that I wish so badly was in a Bulls uniform. This guy is everything a league needs to prosper and to make it fun for everyone, from a 65-year-old to a 10-year-old. This guy is, his personality is dynamite too. Like his adaptation to culture and coming over here and didn't even know he needed a suit for the NBA draft, and then just fully immersing himself in the culture of 2016, 2017, even going back to 2014, 2015 when he was drafted. Like, it's crazy the development, not only physically and what he's been able to do on the basketball court, but the rising superstar that I see in him. And if his game gets any better, like, he's in Milwaukee right now, and had he been in any of these top four markets, this guy would be known everywhere. And what's fun, the funniest part I think about the entire thing was that they were getting more hits on him globally than he is getting here in the United States. Everybody's so concerned with Steph Curry and LeBron James, people forget about Giannis. And I think it's totally cool to see a guy that has blown up so much, and the character and the pride that he has and the love for Milwaukee, I think, is awesome. It's awesome for that city.
Yeah, it really is. It was a fascinating piece. Like Jordan said, if you haven't seen the 60 Minutes thing on the Greek Freak, absolutely do yourself a favor and watch it, because obviously, you know, a lot of guys that make it to the NBA or professional sports leagues here in the USA have similar stories in that they came from really tough times, grew up in tough neighborhoods, grew up in single parent homes, grew up poor, grew up on food stamps, grew up in areas where gang violence was a primary choice for kids as opposed to getting an education or doing something like, you know, staying off the streets and working on their game to get to the professional level. And the Greek Freak did something similar in Greece, where he did have a strong family support system around him, but they were very poor. And he and his siblings were, like, when Giannis wasn't playing pickup in some random park, he and his brother were, like, selling. They were essentially, peddlers on the street, selling illegally just random stuff, whatever they could find, watches, glasses, anything that they could get their hands on to sell. It was a really fascinating story, because I didn't know those details of Giannis Antetokounmpo and his Athens background. And just seeing all of the various footage of him when he makes his trips back to Athens and to other parts of Greece is just really fun stuff, because it shows you firsthand just how global the NBA has become. And like you said, the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks are getting more web and digital kind of fan interaction outside of the U.S. than they are from U.S., from people within our own country is pretty remarkable. And it's a wonderful thing that he and other international players are doing for the NBA.
The funny thing is, can I kind of connect this to the Bulls? If Lauri Markkanen becomes a superstar in this league, or even an all-star, he can be one of those few players that have come crossed internationally, and a huge fan base is, it's crazy. There's a huge fan base in Europe of the NBA, and it's evolving quickly. And I just think about it in terms of the attention that it started to grab when the Bulls got a guy in Lauri Markkanen straight from Finland. Our numbers, even we can look and see where our downloads are for this show, where people are listening to this show, and wherever they're going. And it's funny, because a lot of our downloads come from Finland, and we've seen that sort of change once the Bulls got Lauri Markkanen. We had a lot more listeners tuning in to figure out, you know, what is he doing? The coverage over there isn't the same as the United States. So I think it's really cool. And if that happens to Lauri Markkanen, I think that would be really awesome for the game. And really, I mean, it would be perfect fit for the Bulls in terms of their brand globally. And they already have that with Michael Jordan and everybody. But to see it move towards maybe Europe would be insane. But back to Giannis, that was just incredible.
And to a similar extent, and, you know, part of it was the big rivalry between MJ and Scotty playing a very young Toni Kukoc for the Croatian team in the 92 Olympics in Barcelona. But Toni Kukoc is another guy who, even before the modern era of NBA and all of the international players that are in the NBA now was one of the trendsetters. You know, he came before Dirk and he came before, you know, Manu, and he came before a lot of those guys. And in his own right, Tony was a borderline, you know, star player on a perennial championship team. And he is still within the Bulls organization as an ambassador for the team. And a lot of that probably involves Tony Kukoc traveling and continuing to build that Bulls fan base, not just here, but all over the world. And you're seeing the Greek Freak do the same thing in Milwaukee, and it's really fun and it's really good for
them. All right, so let's get into a couple moves that the Bulls made this weekend. Quickly, the Bulls signed Sean Kilpatrick just recently to a 3-year deal, 2 years non-guaranteed for him at 3 years, $6.3 million. According to Vincent Goodwill, two of those years are non-guaranteed. Bulls are still under the salary floor, meaning the rest of the money will be dispersed among the roster at the end of the season. Matt and I were sitting here trying to figure it out. It seems like this number is very minute. It's going to be somewhere between 80 and 120,000 that the Bulls are under the floor still. So this move, let's talk about this one first, then we'll talk about the CJ Fair move real quick. It seems like okay for $6.3 million. The Bulls had to spend that money anyway. Next year's not guaranteed. So, I mean, if he gets out there and plays halfway decent, I think the Bulls invite him back, pick that option up for a couple million, or it'll depend maybe a carousel of things that'll happen this summer that might keep him around.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Bulls are giving themselves plenty of leeway here and plenty of flexibility because, as you said, they got the option moving forward. And, I mean, it's an interesting prospect. I mean, he is already 28 years old. So kind of like in this, and he's a shooting guard. To me, this is just like another Justin Holiday signing, but a guy who doesn't shoot the three ball as well. He did have his best season came last year, which he spent all of with the Brooklyn Nets. He averaged 13 points, 4 boards, 2.2 assists, and shot 34.1% from downtown, 41% overall. I mean, it's interesting enough and similar to Noah Vonleh in the fact that, okay, look, it didn't cost the team anything realistically because with Vonleh it was a minimal trade and just taking the tail end of his deal, and then with Kilpatrick they needed to get to the floor anyway, so no great risk being taken, and so sure, why not take a look. Hoiberg's, you know, throwing out whatever he has on any given night as far as his rotation anyway. Might as well throw one more guy in there. But as of right now, I don't have any huge hopes or expectations that he's a guy that the Bulls will keep around long term.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Like you had said, 28, he has been with, this will be his sixth NBA team. So six teams within a matter of 3 years. Pretty solid year in his rookie year, which was with Brooklyn and Denver, a little bit in Minnesota. Well, his rookie year technically was 4 games in Minnesota, but 2015-2016, he played 31 games. So that was kind of the height of his career. You brought it up last year, a combination of what he did there, but he's bounced around from a couple different teams, didn't start anywhere, didn't play a whole lot of big minutes. I think this is just kind of like a whatever move for the Bulls. If they need to bring him back next year, in terms of if they end up moving somebody off this team, whether it's Jerian Grant, Justin Holiday, whoever it is, if they move somebody, then they can pick his option up. They have that option to do that next year. So, like you said, it's kind of just like a low risk, needed to do this anyway. Seems like a no-brainer at this point. So I'll be interested to see if he gets in any of these games, if the Bulls just take a look at him. I mean, he will.
It sounds like he might play as soon as against Houston tomorrow. So.
Oh, well, that's good. Then we can at least get an idea of what's going on. I don't have any big hopes for him either. The other person that I wanted to talk about was CJ Fair. CJ Fair being with the G League affiliate Bulls here, the Windy City Bulls. He started in 25 games. He's played in 47 for the Windy City Bulls, averaging somewhere right around 10.1 points per game, shooting at 43.3%. Not a particularly good three-point shooter, 26.2%, but he's long and plays pretty solid defense as well. Obviously, this is just going to, this is another one of those moves to give sort of a look at a guy that can play the three or the four, a wing at 6'8". 218, came out of Syracuse. He's actually a guy that I'm not particular. I have some bias against because he was part of that Syracuse team. That
the Final Four team in 2013, right? He was a big player on that team.
Correct, and where the Indiana couldn't figure out how the hell to play that stupid Syracuse zone, and he was a part of that. And that was one of his best college basketball seasons, actually, was in that 2012-2013 season. So I'm all right with giving this guy a chance. He's 26. Just take a look at him. And obviously it was more so to just try to get some money. And just, I think this was kind of like a 007 secret agent move for the Bulls to say, you know what, all these guys are sitting out. Let's just bring this guy up, let him play, see what he's got, and let's try to lose as many games here in the last handful that we have to take a look and to further evaluate our talent, quote unquote.
Yeah, he's a four-year college player at Cuse. His third and fourth years, he put up really good numbers. He's actually been, previous to coming to the Windy City Bulls, was in and out of the Pacers organization a number of times. Always was on like the bubble for the Pacers in training camp and then never made the final cuts, but has spent time playing for the Pacers G League affiliate, the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, which, P.S., one of the best names of G League teams out there. Come on, Mad Ants, how awesome is that? So I went as soon as this announcement came, I went and looked at some of CJ Fair's highlights from his G League career this season, and there are some nice skills that he has. He's not a floor spacer, but he is very athletic. He attacks the rim, and he also, for a forward, is a pretty skilled passer. There's a little highlight clip on his CJ Fair's Windy City G League page with a bunch of highlights on it, and there's one of them that's a big long sequence of a bunch of beautiful passes he's making. So he's got some floor vision, and he has a good athleticism, and as I said, can attack the rim. So sure, why not throw him in there, see if something happens. This also might just be another cap move where the Bulls aren't even really expecting to take a real look at him. But, you know, the guys that they have taken a look at from Windy City, I'm not sold on Archie Diacono being an NBA player, but Antonio Blakeney, on the other hand, we've seen some things from him. We've seen some potential from him when he has gotten the call and played up. It's a shame that he had that small fracture in his wrist to end his season prematurely. But, maybe it'll give CJ Fair an opportunity to go in there and show people what he can do.
Just real quick on CJ Fair this season, in terms of, like I was saying, I feel like this is going to be a move in terms of maybe you can find an end-of-the-bench defensive player. He played probably the best defense of any player at the Windy City Bulls level in January and March. His defensive rating was a 95.3 in January and a 99.1 in March. His total net rating for both of those months was an 11 and a 9.4. So obviously having a pretty solid month of March to finish up in the G League. So hey, why not? I mean, four-year player at a big-time program, played under pressure. Maybe this is something that can be, you know, whatever. Like, the point of all of this is just to find guys that can be playable until the end of the season, and maybe you strike luck in one of these guys that can be potentially a part of, as you're trying to build up towards the future and build up some of these core pieces that you have around, guys that can stick around on the cheap. So for me, it's not bad. It's going to be, I'll be a little bit entertained. I'll watch a little bit of CJ Fair if he gets out there, and
Are you not detained?
So between all of that, the final thing that I want to get to here, Matt, on Locked On Bulls is a look at the weekend. Obviously, the big talk has been Loyola in this city, and it's been fantastic. Congratulations to Loyola for making it to the Final Four. It's an exciting time. It's an exciting time for every mainstream media news outlet because they can run all of their Sister Jean stories that they had queued up for the next week, and it's great. It's a great thing to see for the city. Just months ago, I think, Matt, when we were talking college basketball early on, maybe it was at the start of the season, and just said how sad it was that it felt like a ghost town in this city for no college basketball. People weren't really interested in it, and I said it's going to be rough because the NBA, in terms of the Bulls, they're rebuilding. The Blackhawks, you don't know what's going on with them. They've been awful this year. We said, you know, Northwestern wasn't meeting expectations, so it's kind of like a ghost town in terms of college basketball, and Loyal has been the absolute story, so congratulations to them. But between all of that, did you get a chance to check out any of these prospects that the Bulls could potentially be picking, say Marvin Bagley, Wendell Carter Jr., Mikal Bridges of Villanova, or anybody maybe in the later rounds off of Michigan or Kansas? Anything that intrigued you outside of Loyola this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure, are we not all in agreement that we're going to spend both of our first round picks on Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer, right? Like that's what we're doing now. We're all on board, right? We're all on board with the new Bulls backcourt of Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson.
Oh, wow.
Though, I mean, I haven't been blown away by anybody as far as the NBA draft and its top prospects that have played in this tournament. It's a shame that a lot of them got bounced so early. Trey Young with Oklahoma, DeAndre Ayton, and Arizona, just to name a couple. You know, Lonnie Walker of Miami, who was the first team that Loyola beat, is another guy that I think is an interesting prospect who might go somewhere in like the end of the late lottery or the, you know, 15 through 20 somewhere, where maybe if he slides, the Bulls could get him with that Pelicans pick, depending on where that ends up, because he's definitely a guy that I've enjoyed watching and might be a good fit for the Bulls. Other than that, I mean, I know you wanted to talk about Mo Wagner from Michigan.
Yeah, he's an interesting person, and I thank our texter for bringing it up to us, because I wasn't sure if we were going to talk about it or not this week, or if we should save it to instead for maybe a look at the NBA draft once we know when everybody's going to be committed. I think this is a good time to talk about it. And first of all, I love Michigan, and I hated them when I was in college because John Beilein puts out squads out there that are just the most frustrating teams in terms of if you're the opponent. And Mo Wagner has been a great story, though, and I think he's very intriguing. I don't know what he's going to do at the next level and how he can transform, but a guy that's 6'10 and can knock down the three at a clip of nearly 40%, that's what he did this year and last year, both playing in 38 games and starting last year for Michigan, this year and last year, shooting at 39.5% and 39.6% this year. His attempts per game has gone up by one since last year, so he's shooting around 4 to 5 threes a game, averaging 14.3 points, shooting 52.4%. This guy, I mean, 6.9 rebounds, a guy that maybe you could steal at the late part of the lottery, or not lottery, the late part of the NBA draft. And right now, a lot of mock drafts have him going somewhere between 27 and 30. So I don't know. It depends on where that Pelicans pick is going to be. But he is a very interesting sort of player that I think could play perfectly in Fred Hoiberg's offense. A guy that's 6'10", can play alongside Bobby Portis, run the floor the way Michigan runs the floor at times, could spread the offense out. And I think it would just be another weapon at a Pelicans pick that, if it does end up at 23, 24, be pretty nice. I mean, it's not a bad option. If you look at all of his intangibles and the way he's played throughout the tournament and in John Beilein's system, I think it's a pretty interesting and intriguing prospect at that time, like between 24 and 30.
Yeah, and then another one that I would mention if we're talking about guys on teams who made deeper runs is Zaire Smith of Texas Tech, that forward who played very well through large portions of Texas Tech's run to the Elite Eight. They did end up getting bounced, but the athleticism and the ceiling of what he could become at the NBA level is very intriguing to me. And he's another guy that, depending on where that Pelicans pick ends up, if he's there and the Bulls are use about, you know, and the Bulls are on the clock with that Pelicans pick, I would love it if they took him, Smith from Texas Tech.
Yeah, I like him. I like his game a lot too, and I wonder if he'll come out in the draft. Just kind of looking over his tournament log here, he had 4 points in that game against West Virginia. This was in the first round, then played Stephen F. Austin. He had 10 points in that one. He had 18 against Florida, 13 against Purdue, and then 7 against Villanova. So, yes, a lot of athleticism there, and he can shoot the ball pretty well, too. I mean, his clip this season is 45% from three, and he's attempting 3.4 three-pointers per game, so pretty decent for a guard. It'll be interesting to see where the Bulls land up. I don't imagine they're going to take a guard at the lottery, at the top of the lottery, unless they slide somewhere between, I don't know, as they slide down to 8 or possibly 9, where they could take a look at maybe Colin Sexton. But outside of that, I think we're going to get a forward or some type of big man, a guy that can play the 3, the 4, or the 5 for this sort of think running gun Bulls team that they're trying to develop. One more thing on Mo Wagner real quick in terms of that Pelicans pick, though. I went and looked at his offensive box plus minus and his defensive box plus minus, and so, and the totals too over his two big seasons with Michigan. And so for box plus minus, those people out there who aren't huge statisticians, it's an estimate of the points per 100 possessions a player contributes above league average, translated to an average team player. So over these 2 years that Mo Wagner's played, he posted a 7.2 box plus minus and a 7.9 in 2016-2017, 2017-2018 with Michigan. That's good enough to land him in the top 50 of all-time Big Ten players. So since they've been keeping the stat as of 1985-86, he's in the top 50 of those. So not only is he a great offensive player, but he's improved his defense tremendously from his sophomore year to his junior year. I think he would be a pretty solid player if everything checks out in the if everything checks out in terms of the combine and his invitation to the NBA Pro Days, and we'll see what he does against Loyola if he has another big game, but I would not be opposed to taking another guy like this who can shoot, spread the floor, and he's huge, especially if the Bulls are going to go with a forward at that slot between hopefully 6 and 8, but we'll have to see. But he is a very interesting prospect.
Yeah, you'd think that you would like to see the Bulls add to somewhere, add their a wing or their front court, and that might be most likely. That goes back to the whole drafting for need versus drafting best available, and what will we see from the Bulls front office and their scouting team when it comes time for that NBA draft? And it'll likely depend on who is available and who's on the board. But I think I think I'm with you. I would prefer to see the Bulls take either a wing or some kind of combo forward or a big to try to pair well with Markkanen in that front court, because I don't think that Trae Young or Colin Sexton are really worth a top 10 pick. I know people have been fluctuating a lot on where those guys deserve to be taken in this 2018 draft, and as much as you can make the argument for, well, you know, if you pair Young with Chris Dunn in the backcourt and Dunn can make up for Trae Young's defensive liabilities, sure, I don't know if that's a good enough reason to take him, because I don't know about his ceiling, and I could say the same for Sexton. So I'm with you. I think the Bulls, hopefully we can move up another spot, maybe two in these final stretch of games. Got two more against Brooklyn. Those will be very important. But what we've seen from some of the wings and some of the combo forwards and some of the bigs in this tournament, I'm hoping that that's where the Bulls go.
I think we're both in agreement here that both of those picks, wherever that lottery pick lands and wherever that Pelicans pick lands, I think the most important thing is defensive-minded players first. Like, obviously, anywhere between that top, anywhere right in that top 10, you're going to get a guy that can score. But
which is why I'm not all that upset that we might lose out on, say, Marvin Bagley, because I'm like, have you looked at his defensive numbers?
Yeah. Like, it was not
for a
good
guy with his athleticism and his size. The dude can't play defense. Cannot play defense.
Him and Wendell Carter Jr. did not show up in that Duke game, and they played that weird zone. Duke played that weird zone, that one, that 4-1 zone, and then they were going to a 3-2 a little bit. Wendell Carter Jr., though, he looked awful in that last game. Marvin Bagley looked disinterested on the defensive end. They couldn't get him the ball on offense. They played an overtime game, and Marvin Bagley had 9 shots. Nine shots.
That's nuts.
How does the best player in the NCAA, one of the best players in the NCAA, get nine shots in an overtime game to send you to the Final Four? So
how many shots did Grayson Allen have?
And Grayson Allen.
I don't know
left.
About you, Jordan. I'm just glad we got Kansas instead of Duke. I hate Duke. I don't want Duke in the Final Four.
And you might potentially get two Duke players in this first round. How about a Wendell Carter Jr. and a Grayson Allen, both those picks? I think that would be the biggest nightmare of all time for you, right?
God, no. I mean, I made this start on a different radio show that I was doing on Saturday. If Grayson Allen is selected by the Bulls with that second first-round pick, I'm packing up and leaving the city of Chicago.
I'll be looking for a new co-host if we are with the
That's it. That's the line. That is the line I'm drawing in the sand, Gar Pax. If you draft Grayson Allen, I am out of here.
Well, they're going to be responsible for having to find me a new co-host then if that does happen. So all I said is, like, I like Marvin Bagley, like the length, the size, the ability to score, but him being shut down and like they were double teaming him every time, and maybe that's more of the guard's fault than anything else, is they couldn't find a way to get him involved, especially early. I don't know. Like, I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of room for improvement when he goes to the NBA. I think it's going to take a lot longer than maybe a lot of people expected early on. I just wasn't impressed with either one, and I'm not going to hold that one game against either one of a Wendell Carter or against Marvin Bagley. But like I said, I thought for the most part Marvin Bagley looked disinterested on the defensive end. He looks frustrated when he was getting double teamed and not getting the ball. So just some things to just I monitored over the weekend as I was watching those top prospects and watching Duke as well.
Yeah, and we got a couple more games to go, and this is the annoying part of the tourney to me, when you have that awesome action of the Sweet 16 going right into the Elite 8 games. So for like four straight days, you got all these epic, intense games, and then you get your Final Four, and then you have to wait a week for the next games.
Well, that's good about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We did not forget about the Kirk Heinrich giveaway. We have DM'd the winner on Twitter. So if you're on Twitter, make sure you're checking your direct messages. You could be one of our winners. We'll announce it officially once we hear back from them, but we have another giveaway coming this week. So make sure you're checking Twitter, following us at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck, and liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Keep it subscribed here on Locked On Bulls on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're giving away something I think this is the giveaway that it's a little bit of an upgrade from this Kirk Heinrich. So I think this is going to be even bigger and better than what you guys might expect.
The best thing that we could ever give our Bulls Nation listeners is free Kirk Heinrich memorabilia. That is a legend. That is a Bulls legend you're talking about.
Possibly? Maybe? Questionable? Maybe.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
So, yes, we have another great giveaway this week happening. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now. You're going to have to stay tuned to the show this week or check us out on Twitter at Locked On Bulls or on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Dash Radio is 100% free. DashRadio.com and the Dash Radio app. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Keep sending those texts in. Say what's up to us at 331-979-1369. If you're courageous enough to leave us a voicemail, go ahead and do that. If we get enough, we're going to play those on Wednesday as part of our mailbag session. So if you got a rant, if you got something to say, leave us a voicemail, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, have a wonderful night, Bulls Nation, and a great week. We are out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.